Okay, so 15 minutes to put everything you need to know about GDPR, so a little bit like Chris to Taxati. I'm not going to probably make it in 15 minutes, so please no questions at the end. The second thing is this has been prepared by two lawyers from my legal department back in the UK. It will be a very dry subject. This is legislative and regulatory. I've no time for any war stories, but Chris covered most of those in relation to a lot of the things that he put up onto the screen. Actually, if they would have happened post May 25th in the EU, would have had far greater repercussions than perhaps they're having just from a reputational perspective, as he was highlighting. And what I hope is that this assists you to raise your level of awareness around GDPR. For those of you who feel that you are already prepared, I hope you can use it as a sense check. And if you've missed any items, then you can pick up a few tips. And for those of you who are partway through it, then you can use it as a piece of reference. For those of you who haven't started yet, my details of the company are at the very end. You're probably in a position where you need some support. It takes around 6 months for a medium to large size enterprise to get through the GDPR compliance process. It starts in 6 weeks. If you're a small business, actually, providing you can get the right sort of toolkit available online in many, many places, then you can probably still get to a point of reasonable compliance within the time frame that's been given. This has been around since April 2016, this piece of regulation. So they've given us plenty of time to prepare for it. May 25th of this year is actually when they're going to start to enforce it. So, as I say, it's a dry subject. You're probably wondering why there's a bottle of ketchup on there. I gave this presentation to a conference a couple of weeks ago called Visit USA. And it was a group of marketing businesses who run travel and organised travel within the US. Now, I went on in between a lady who presented about Circus LA. She put videos up, showed some of cars, some of home, very, very impressive. And then a guy, is there anyone from Pittsburgh in the room? I followed the guy from Pittsburgh, and his most interesting thing that he could say about Pittsburgh is it's the home of Heinz tomato ketchup. And that was his presentation for the people from the European Union, why they should go to Pittsburgh. I went on after, and I made that look like a trailer from the Star Wars movie. That's how dry a subject this is. Interestingly, although it's a dry subject, McAfee have done some research. I'll make several references to this during what I'm talking about. But 74% of the people that were spoken to by McAfee saw GDPR, if it's done properly, that it provided a commercial advantage to, which I think is quite interesting. So, who does it apply to? How's it going to affect us? So, in essence, anyone who works with private data with EU citizens, no matter where they are in the world, this will apply to them. Essentially, that breaks down into two parts: those who offer goods and services to EU subjects, data subjects, or as is the case. I don't know how diverse we've got in the room, but this is going to affect anything from production all the way through to marketing and distribution. It's got a big implication on the latter end of that supply chain in terms of what we do about capturing personal data for those who want subscription-based services. But it's the first global data protection law that's been in existence. There are others in development. China have got one. And the US obviously are developing theirs as well. So it affects those who monitor their behaviour, so the behaviour of the subscribers to our services, it will impact upon that. No matter whether you're doing that in the EU as a service, or whether you were taking the data out of the EU to another territory, such as the US or anywhere else for that matter, provided it impacts on an EU data subject, then you will be applicable for GDPR. It also looks at companies that are holding personal data on behalf of EU residents, and that again is regardless of the company's location. It relates to personal data that is going to identify an individual, whether that be directly or indirectly, so that could be a name, could be a photo, could be an IP address, could be a social media posting, or indeed it could be if you're monitoring that person's behaviour or what patterns they have when they're surfing the internet, and you're going to use that for intuitive purposes or intelligence purposes for your future marketing campaigns, that could be classified as personal data. Now, at the end, I'll probably get a whole load of questions about what might be and what might not be personal data. It's a very subjective test. GDPR does not go into great detail about what it considers to be personal data or not. It's a very subjective test. As I say, it's going to into effect in May, and it's going to impact on our industry substantially. So what are the key changes? So I'll put it into some broad headings because we've got a short amount of time. But basically, harmonisation. They want us to apply a risk-based approach. Now, for those of us who are from an audit background or a compliance background like myself, risk-based approach is nothing new to us. So that should be fairly familiar and fairly straightforward for us to implement. There are other things about harmonisation. So at the moment, each country has its own data protection legislation. In the UK, we have the Data Protection Act. There's a national registration with our Commissioner's Office for people who are going to hold personal data, and we're regulated by that regulatory body, and we have to register what we're doing with that data with them. That will go. Need regulation within the EU. It applies if you're moving data from one part of the EU to the other, and you can have cross-jurisdiction, and you could have multiple actions taken against you, both from an individual basis within a country within the EU, or a class type action across multiple jurisdictions. The local regulation will still apply, and that will probably be where the majority of local matters are addressed or redressed in the form of fines or warnings and such like. In terms of the broader scope, currently most data protection legislation covers people who control the data, not necessarily those that process it. So the data controllers are the people who set the rules, the policies, the regulation from inside the business as to how we're going to treat that personal data. And the process of the people who actually do the activities. And it's going to be applied territorially and globally. What that means really is that because it's going to apply to both the controllers and the processes, it's now going to capture all of our supply chain. And potentially those who are at the top of the supply chain, content owners and such like, they will need to ensure that their supply chain are behaving in a responsible manner. And that won't just be about policy and procedures. This won't be dealt with just by policy and procedure alone. The GDPR will require certain things to be put in contractually to ensure that the data, for example, is held securely and that it's processed lawfully and fairly. So from a contractual perspective, we all need to perhaps go away and look at where we've got data belonging to the EU citizens about how we're doing it. Not just on these arterial routes, on the B roads as well, right down into the bottom ends of the supply chain activity like localization. Wider definitions, it's a simple example, is that the processing of data belonging to children will now need the parental consent. It's just picking up the odd bits and loose ends that were doing in previous legislation. Increased obligations, so data principles being processed fairly and lawfully, for an example, as I said. They're going to look at the consent aspects of that, and the transparency of reporting. So a lot of you will be familiar now that if you want to go to, say, accept terms and conditions, you tick a box or that box is often automatically ticked if you accept the terms and conditions, but you very rarely do you look or understand with all that terminology and verbiage that sits behind that. That's going to go. You're going to have to actually consent, you're going to have to actually tick the box, but also they're going to have to make in plain and simple language that you understand what's going to happen with your data. And when you start to think about Mr. Zuckerberg and these sorts of things that are going to now have to face a tribunal or a committee, how much effort was actually made by people like that for making sure that people understand what's going to happen to their data? Further point is in terms of reaching down past the arterial routes, did he really understand what was happening to that data further down his supply chain? Likely that that's not been the case. Strengthened individual rights. So rights for information and data access. People now have rights to understand, to ask what information you've got about them, and they have a right to access that data and ask them. You're likely to get a lot more requests if you're people who are responsible for that type of activity. You've also got a right to rectification when they get it wrong, and you've also got a right for it to be removed or erased from those databases. Again, we're likely to get a lot more requests of that type. Data portability, you can ask your data back, or you can ask for it to be transferred from one place to another. Now, it is an interesting concept. So, you're a person in a marketing organisation, and you don't want to really give anyone's data away because that's your crown jewels. But now a data subject can actually say, actually, no, I don't want you to take control of that. I want you to send it to this next place. Okay. So they've got to make sure that we can demonstrate that we can do this fairly and lawfully. How can we achieve this? Well, again, this isn't foreign to us, this isn't new. It's all about governance process, securing the data properly, and about training. If you're a company that's holding private data, it's large amounts of traffic, then you're likely to need a data protection officer to carry out that function for you. If it's smaller amounts of data, then you need to probably still appoint someone, but it could be something that's omnicompetent. They're already doing it somewhere else or doing it in the wrong. Policy and procedures, they won't work alone, as we've said. We need to keep good records, so logs are very important. We need to understand where our data is, what we're doing with it, how we're disposing of it. And if we're moving it from one place to another within our supply chain, then we need to have contractual agreements in place. In terms of security, we need to have an appropriate level of security in place. That's what the GDPR says, and that's all it says. It doesn't tell us how to do it. So what I would suggest is we have lots of standards. We have framework standards, ISO, NIST, etc., etc. We should utilise those. But also, we've got the standards later on when we talk about the new TPM. There's good practice in all of these things that could help us demonstrate our compliance should we have a breach, and breaches will occur. So the other thing is that we've got to design this in, and it's got to be done by before. You can't do it after the event and decide, oh, I should have done this, now I'm going to do it. That won't stop the fine from happening or the penalty from happening. It's got to be fundamental to the actual process that you're going to implement. How you do that is you do impact assessments. Again, it's basic risk assessment, so people like myself in the security industry, this is normal available type activities. Okay, so 72 hours, please. If you have a data breach, then you have to report it within 72 hours according to GDPR. McAfee, just very quickly on this, said, they went out to their respondents for the research, 26% only said they could meet the 72 hour deadline. The average was 11 days, and 24% said it had taken more than 2 weeks. So we've got quite a lot of effort to put in on that. I'll cover most of that. So I'm only a service provider, so will GDPR apply to me? So as I said, we've got to make sure we go beyond these arterial routes, out into our supply chain. We need to have contracts in place, and we need to be explicit about how we want our supply chain providers to behave. We need to check that they're implementing appropriate security measures. Again, that's where standards such as the TPM could assist us in that regard and make some opportunity for further development in relation to that. They have to inform your data controller in the event of them having a breach, bearing in mind that we've only got 72 hours to do that, and you have an obligation to do that 72 hours as much as anyone else. You need to maintain good records, that's back to the logs. You need to be able to cooperate with the relevant regulators, so that's where your data protection officer or your appointed person will come in. And it doesn't matter where it is, as long as it's within the EU, it's cross-border data transfer, so it has to be relevant across the whole piece. And as I say, we need to get it signed up to it. What happens if you get it wrong? That's the burning question of everybody's tongue. Well, it's a hefty €20 million fine, or 4% of your total worldwide global turnover. Basically, it's a lot of money. It's far better to be preventative and put these things in place than get it wrong and pay the fine. However, interestingly, part of the McAfee research said that 64% of business leaders felt there was stigma attached to reporting a data breach. And actually, almost half of them said they'd rather pay a fine than actually report it and it become public, which means that GDPR, you can't do that. This will become public. You might have out-of-court settlements and such on. So there is an issue there. But what you've really got to think about is not just about the money. This is the risk to reputation, because that could be even higher. It takes longer to repair a reputational risk than it does to recover financially from a fine. And Chris, again, so has shown plenty of sexy war stories, I'll just put a few up on there. The other thing to get this home is you've got to have buy-in at the highest level. One of the best ways to get buy-in at CEO level is that this could cost executives jobs. So when we're trying to get this home, we need to make sure that they understand that they have accountability for putting this place in place at an executive level. And we could also start to see US class action. So for example, those people who are working in the marketing arena, you could have a group of people come together and take a class action against you if you've been negligent across your piece rather than it just being a single breach. Having said that, the more you do to become compliant, the less the impact's likely going to be. So you might get a warning and reprimands and corrective orders. And I have to say, talking to the small medium enterprises I have across Europe, actually there's a lot of people who are just sitting and waiting to see what's actually going to happen. And when you ask if anyone's started their GDPR preparedness yet, it's often the small to medium-sized enterprises that say they're either not fully aware of it or they haven't started it yet. Bear this in mind, they might be part of our supply chain for our larger organisations. So here's the things to take away. This is what I think we should be doing. Determine how it impacts upon your business and how it's going to impact upon your supply chain. Know your data. Again, in terms of the McAfee research said that 47% knew where their data was explicitly. 40-odd percent knew what country it was in. 9% knew what region it was in. That's starting to get a little bit worried. So we need to know what have we got. A lot of small medium enterprises that don't even know what data they've got. We need to know where it is. Where does it go? How are we processing it? How are we protecting it from security? How long are you keeping it for? And how are you getting rid of it? We need to set up roles and responsibilities. We need to know that the liability extends just beyond the controllers and to include the processes also. And we need to be able to respond. We need to be able to respond to incidents. But we also need to be able to gear up for the data subjects that are going to exercise their rights and ask more challenging questions. Take any questions.
I don't think we have time for questions. I think you took 3 minutes of Chris's presentation earlier from my side. Thank you so much, Chris Johnson.